Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, I thought about this when I got up today. All four of these division series could end today, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be pretty wild. And the games have been good, too, so I don't feel super disappointed or cheated out. You know, we build it as all this division rivalry hatred. I think we've gotten some good games here. So, yeah, I mean, it would definitely be interesting if they all wrap today.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, we haven't been cheated at all. Yesterday, a great day of games, lots of intensity, great performances, great plays, even some division rivalry hate. Let's go in order of how they played out yesterday. Braves and Marlins were the first game of the day, game two of their series. Dansby Swanson got the Braves going in the bottom of the second.
This ball driven deep to left field. Going back and looking up is Dickerson, and that one is gone. Dansby Swanson, for the second day in a row, has left the yard. And his home run gives the Braves the first run of the game. It's 1-0.
Taylor, I don't know if I mentioned it before. Dansby Swanson went to Vanderbilt. I don't know if you knew that. I went to Vanderbilt, too. It's kind of cool.
Oh, I had no idea. Thanks for sharing, Buster. I guess I don't think people know that about you. Interesting.
I know. All right, bottom of the fourth inning, the Braves tacked on.
Darnold has two home runs against Lopez, and this one is also hit, and it's gone. Make it three home runs off Pablo Lopez for Travis Darnold. And he backs up yesterday's great offensive night with another one today. 2-0 Braves.
Carl Ravage on ESPN Radio with that call. Meanwhile, Ian Anderson, the Braves rookie, great on the mound again. 5 2/3 innings, no runs allowed. 8 strikeouts, 1 walk. And the bullpen that followed behind him was outstanding. Here's what it sounded like in the 9th inning.
That one put in play. Melanson went to the bare hand. It got past him, but it's Albies who throws to first, and that'll do it here in game two. Melanson wisely pulls his hand back. Going to need that hand if you want to continue to pitch and follow this path to the next round of the playoffs.
Yeah, so the Braves now had 2-0 in their series. They could potentially wrap it up today. The talk after yesterday's game was how great Ian Anderson has been. Here's Travis Darnold.
I see it every day. I see it every day when we show up to the field, even on his off days. He's always locked in, paying attention to every hitter, how he thinks he would get him out, does his homework. He's always been like that since I've seen him up here, and I think he's going to continue to do it for the rest of his career, and it's something that should be noticed and put out there.
Here's Braves manager Brian Snitker.
No, not really. I mean, just credit goes to obviously the pitchers, and, you know, the guy putting the numbers down has done an unbelievable job. Travis has been, you know, you got to give him credit too, because there's not a whole lot of shaking going on, and he's right in sync with those guys, and the game plan has been good, and, you know, you can have a game plan all you want, but if you can't execute it, then it's not worth the paper it's written on and all the colors that they have and everything. So those guys have done a great job in executing what they wanted to do.
In the interviews I saw, Ian Anderson just had the biggest grin on his face. Here was Ian Anderson answering a question.
Yeah, everyone in there is having such a good time, you know, even given the circumstances. You know, obviously we wish there could be fans out there, but we're making the most of it and having a good time with it.
Marlins manager Don Mattingly was asked if he expected the Braves to be this good.
I don't know if we anticipated getting totally shut down, but, you know, obviously, we respect what they do.
Out in L.A., the Astros and Athletics, Houston needing one game to wrap up this series. A tremendous game. Alex Bregman got a hit in the bottom of the fifth inning to extend the Astros' lead.
There's a swing, and there's a shot. High and deep to left, racing back. Canna turning around. It's off the wall. He plays it off of the fence. Here's the throw into second base, and not in time to get Bregman as another run comes in to score. Brantley crosses home plate. That'll make it 6-4, Houston.
Dave O'Brien on ESPN Radio and Kyle Tucker tacked on.
The pitch. A swing and a ground ball. That is a base hit into center field. Bregman in to score. Throw comes into third base. Another run up there as Bregman crosses home plate. RBI single by Tucker. Now 7-4, Houston.
So at that point, you're kind of thinking, you know what, this series is over. Oakland is down 2-0. They're down by three runs in the bottom of the fifth inning. In the sixth inning, Ramon Laureano gathered the Oakland players together and worked to fire them up, screaming at his teammates. Top of the seventh inning, they got a couple guys on base, and this happened.
He'll swing at the first pitch, hit a high fly that's deep to right. Backing up Tucker, backing up. Leaping, and he can't get it. It's gone. It's into the right field seats. Chad Pinder, his third hit of the day. Another A's home run. It has tied the game at seven.
A shocker. Top of the eighth inning, Oakland rallied again.
The pitch swung on, big cut and a high pop up into right field. Moving over near the line, Tucker. He'll make the catch, tagging up Grossman. He comes sprinting home. The throw home. He's safe. It glances off the catcher's mitt. Grossman in on a slide, and the A's are in front 8-7 in the eighth.
And they would extend that lead to 9-7. And, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. Bob Melvin turned to Liam Hendricks for the seventh, the eighth, and the ninth. Here's what it sounded like in the eighth inning. Josh Reddick at the plate.
Now the 3-2 pitch coming. Swing and a miss, 98 miles an hour. Reddick slams the bat, breaks it, and then snaps it over his knee in frustration. What a moment that was, leaving runners at second and third.
So Oakland is alive, trailing now in this series 2-1. Bob Melvin talked about the Pinder homer.
Yeah, that was more like an earthquake than a shift. I mean, off the bat, the way it's carrying today, you think maybe, but as soon as Tucker kept going back, you had a pretty good idea that it had a chance to go out. He's got tremendous power to all fields. Getting a great opportunity right now, taking advantage of it in a time when usually you aren't afforded these type of opportunities. So I can't say enough about him. He's been fantastic the whole postseason.
Here's Chad Pinder.
I didn't know off the bat. You know, I knew I hit a good enough for a sack fly, and it just kept going. You know, right before that inning, Ramon got everybody up and got everybody fired up, just saying this wasn't it. You know, we kind of talked yesterday about how the momentum, you know, when we score, it seemed like they scored back and punched us back, and we hadn't been able to respond, and Ramon kind of nipped that in the butt. And he had an incredible at-bat by Simi, and then another great at-bat by Tommy, and, put us in that position. Just it was awesome.
The Astros announced that Zach Greinke's right arm is structurally sound, and they're hopeful that he can pitch again in this postseason, which basically means they told the reporters nothing. He's functional. Zach Greinke 2 days ago threw about 15 pitches on flat ground. Rays, Yankees, the Rays and Yankees tied one game all after Tampa Bay won game two. And Michael Perez got the Rays going in the top of the second.
There go the runners, and the 3-2 is a swing and a liner off the glove of LeMahieu into shallow right. Picked up by Judge. Wendell will come in to score. Around a third goes Adames, and Michael Perez drives in the first run of the night for Tampa Bay.
Masahiro Tanaka, who has such a great postseason history, on the mound for the Yankees in this game. But that first run, maybe it's ominous, because the Rays, when they score first in the during the course of this season, 29-6, an .829 winning percentage. It was 1-1, top of the fourth. The Rays rallying against Tanaka, two runners on base, and Kevin Kiermaier was at the plate.
Torres trying to keep the runner Wendell close at second, and a swing and a fly ball to deep right off the bat of Kiermaier. Judge back, it's gone. Kevin Kiermaier with a three-run homer. We told you about his career numbers off Tanaka. They just got a little bit better. And the Rays go out in front 4-1.
Dan Schulman on ESPN Radio. Michael Perez came to the plate in the top of the sixth.
Here's the 0-2, and he sends a fly ball to left center field. He's hit it pretty well. Gardner going back, and it's gone. Perez, after failing to get a bunt down on an 0-2 pitch, goes to the opposite field and hits a home run to make it 7-2 Rays.
Now, the Yankees weren't completely done. That guy, Giancarlo Stanton, who had homered in each of the Yankees' first four postseason games, came to the plate in the top of the eighth.
The 2-0, and Stanton sends a fly ball to center field. It's deep. Kiermaier's back, and it's gone. Two-run homer for Stanton. He's homered for the fifth consecutive game, and it's now 8-4.
But this is how it ended.
The 2-1 and a swing and a ground ball to third. Up with it is Wendell and across the diamond to get him, and the Rays will win it. They break out the home run ball again tonight with Kiermaier and a Rosarena and Perez all hitting homers. Morton out pitches Tanaka, and the Rays now lead the best of five, 2-1.
After the game, Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, was asked what went wrong with Masahiro Tanaka.
I mean, I'm going to have to look at some pitches. You know, with the shadows over there, it's a little tough to have a real good look from the side tonight. You know, they had some really competitive at-bats against him. I thought it looked like he made some pitches and some big spots to get out of it. Thought we almost had to strike him out, throw him out ahead of the Kiermaier homer. But, you know, I'd have to go back and see some of the depth on some of the pitches and where the misses were.
Stanton talked about the Yankees as they move forward.
We know what we need to do. It's going to be a tough battle, but we know there's no other option. So we know what's in front of us, and that's all you can do. I mean, this what's happened has happened, and we know we need to get some wins.
Stanton, unbelievable start to this postseason. 6 home runs. He was asked how will the team respond in game 4?
We got to come out swinging. We got to come out exactly like that, like our backs are against the wall. And, you know, it's now or never. So let's go.
Here's Rays manager Kevin Cash talking about the depth of his lineup.
Well, that's what makes us good, that we've got so many guys that can help us win games on both sides of the ball, whether it's with their defense or offensively. Depth is something that I guess everybody has. We have talented depth, and that's got us to this point in a big way.
Last game of the day, Dodgers and Padres. The Dodgers holding a 1-0 lead in that series. And Cody Bellinger came to the plate in the bottom of the fourth inning with the Dodgers leading 3-1.
Bellinger swings here and drives one center field. This one's got a chance. Back there. Gone! Bellinger went down and got it and powered it out to center field. And Cody with his first home run of this postseason. The Dodgers add a run. And it is 4-1.
Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio, the legend. Well, in the top of the sixth inning, the Padres struck back. First, Manny Machado at the plate.
Here's a 2-1. Swing and a ball ripped left field. This one well struck on its way. Gone! Over the left field wall, Manny Machado, a solo rocket. And the Padres get a run back. It is 4-2 here in the sixth.
Yeah, and when Machado hit that home run, he turned and fired his bat at his dugout, getting the Padres players fired up. Apparently, Eric Hosmer was at the plate next.
He's ahead of Hosmer 1-2. Nobody on, nobody out. Here comes. Swing and a high fly ball hit in the air right field. Betts going back at the track near the wall, and it's into the bullpen and gone. Back-to-back homers, Eric Hosmer. He'll touch them all. And the Padres are within a run. It's 4-3.
So the Dodgers are clinging to that 43 lead in the top of the seventh inning. Fernando Tatis Jr., always dangerous, hit a ball toward center field.
Brada roll fires. Swing and a ball driven in the air out to center field. Going back, Bellinger back some more. Back some more. Leaps! And he made the grab! What a catch! Bellinger stole a homer that would have given the Padres the lead. What a play.
And when he made that play, Gratterall threw his hat, and he was excited. He got his glove dropped. Manny Machado started yelling at him, and then Gratterall blew a kiss toward Machado. A lot of stuff going on. The Dodgers still had the lead in the ninth inning. Kenley Jansen was brought in to close out the game, but he struggled, and Dave Roberts called on Joe Kelly.
The kick, the 1-2. Swing and a ground ball right side, right at Hernandez. Gobbles it up, throws to first, and that's the ball game. And the Dodgers hang on by their fingernails and win game 2. 6-5 the final as Kelly bails out Jansen. And the Dodgers win it, and they're up in this series 2-0.
A great game. Cody Bellinger talked afterward about his home run and his home run robbery.
I saw the changeup, and I knew it was low. I just tried to stay through it as much as I could. And I knew I hit that ball well, but like I said, I haven't even hit a ball to center field in batting practice, I don't think. And it was nice to see it hit the wall, over the wall. I knew he hit it, so it was either in my head, it was like, all right, that's gone off the black screen, or I'm going to get to the wall and maybe have a chance to catch it and just kind of
turned around as fast as I could, got to the fence, and saw that it was robbable. So I just had to try to time up the jump. And that's how it worked out. They asked me out there. I honestly don't know what happened. I don't know what Bruce or Gratterall did. But it's a big play in a postseason game. So I got Gratterall's back.
A couple other notes before we talk to Carl Ravitch and Bill Shaken of the LA Times. Cincinnati Reds president of baseball operations, Dick Williams, stepped down after nearly 15 years with the team. And Cleveland manager Terry Francona spoke with reporters yesterday, and he talked about the possibility of retirement. It was something that he considered as he went through multiple surgeries. But Terry Francona, as we've talked about, he just loves to manage. So for now, Indians are moving ahead with planning for Terry Francona to be leading the team in 2021. Now, before we get to Ravi and to Bill, and also hear from Michael Kay of the YES Network and ESPN Radio in New York, check out the latest episode of Jalen and Jacoby. The guys discuss the dominance of LeBron James, Anthony Davis's defense on Jimmy Butler, Doc Rivers paying homage to Dr. J, and more NFL players testing positive for COVID-19. Plus, WNBA champion Sue Bird stops by the show. Download and subscribe to Jalen and Jacoby wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
That's right, Lele, the Rabbit Train doing play-by-play on ESPN Radio, Braves Marlins series. Rabbit, what's that like?
It's a great experience. I mean, I get to work with one of my best friends, Tim Kirkchin. He's actually sitting in the studio that I am, socially distanced as we may be. So there's a rhythm and a chemistry there. And it's the first foray back into radio since graduating from Ithaca College. And I'm not even going to date myself as to when that was. But, you know, it's very, very different. And I'm enjoying the idea that even though you're taking the feed off of a television, you've got to transport yourself into an area in which, while you're watching the game on television and describing it, the people in their automobiles or however they're listening to it don't have the ability to see what you're seeing. So you know, like every radio person will tell you, have to really paint the picture, and it's not broad brush. It's be as descriptive as you can be. That part has been really fulfilling and rewarding, and doing it with Tim and feeling good about it afterwards is just a feeling I haven't had in a long time as far as just doing radio. So that part on a personal level has been great. The series has been well played, you know, close games. So it's been a great deal of fun and very rewarding.
Yeah, I grew up listening to radio because we didn't have a television on the farm. And so I've been listening to all the broadcasts. I love you and Tim working together. It's been a lot of fun. we're getting down to it. We could see four eliminations today. And yesterday, Carl, we had bat flips. We had kisses blown sarcastically. We had a big dugout speech. It really was kind of a fun welcome to October, capped off by that Padre-Dodger game last night, where you get Cody Bellinger stealing a home run and you know, the Padres and Dodgers going back and forth across the field. What'd you think of that game last night?
I thought the game was as good a baseball game, just strictly baseball game, as perhaps we've seen all season. I had this conversation, maybe you heard it yesterday with Tim, but I asked him and I'll ask you, and I think it speaks to what you're getting at. So we go through the 60-game regular season, and in a lot of ways, it lacks urgency, enthusiasm, energy. People are plodding through, just literally trying to get through this, staying healthy, getting to the finish line of the playoffs. And now once we've turned the page and are proceeding with the playoffs and moving deeper and deeper into them, I asked him, because I feel this way, does the playoffs feel more credible to you? Does the teams that are still alive make you feel like, even if it were 162, we'd have most of these teams still in it? And there is an intensity about it. It actually, without people in the stands, feels like playoff baseball would feel. You can sense the intensity. You understand the moment. You understand the bullpen moves. We're kind of back, at least in our series, to using the same guys back-to-back days. You saw Aaron Boone the other night take out Garcia after one inning. That all of a sudden, to me, it feels like I've been transported into what feels far more normal with regards to postseason baseball than I probably would have imagined. And last night's Dodgers-Padres game, that celebration after Bellinger made the catch would make you feel like this was a must-win game six of a World Series to force game seven, when in fact it was an already up 1-0 in a best-of-five series, and we're winning the series. And that catch caused that type of celebration. So, you know, it just feels like this is a far more normal emotional reaction than the regular season was. Do you get that sense?
No doubt about it. Look, we talked a lot during the regular season about how much the players miss the fans, but now they do have that element of, you got to win today. There's that feeling right of urgency, which has been brought in now in these short series that was not there during the 60 games. The intensity's ratcheted up, and it doesn't matter as much that the fans are not there. Of course we want them there. You know, that would be fun. It'd be fun to see a crowd last night react to what Cody Bellinger did. The, you know, Manny Machado yelling across the field at Bruce Dark Gratterall, and Gratterall blowing kiss at him after he threw the cap he throws his glove like he's a little leaguer in Williamsport because he's excited about Bellinger's catch.
Right,
no question
exactly
about it. Here's Eric Hosmer, the Padres veteran, the great leader on that team, talking about what happened in that game last night.
Like we talked about, now the game's different nowadays. I think fans want to see more emotion, especially in playoff series, especially in a rivalry series like this. So like I said, when you get the best competitors from all over the world on the biggest stage, you're going to show a lot of emotion, you're going to show a lot of excitement. And nothing got out of hand. Those guys were just sticking up for each other, for their teams, and like we said, we just continued on with the game. So, that's just baseball. That's what it is nowadays. It's a new age. It's a new era. So, I didn't see anything wrong with either Manny's bat flip or what Gratterall did with his glove or his hat.
I thought what Haas said was perfect. What do you think, Carl?
Yeah, I do. I agree 100%. I think where I get a little lost on some of these statements that, the game has changed and it's new, implies that I think the baseball fan prefers it one way or the other, where I think the baseball fan, the sports fan, they watch sports because of the passion. They watch sports because of the emotion. You think that sitting in their living rooms as they watch this game, that when Bellinger made that catch, people sat placidly and said, "Oh, good catch." You know, they get up, they scream. We've seen it with Super Bowl celebrations on home videos of people watching and reacting. That is a normal human emotion to react. And the idea that baseball is somehow now embracing it, I think, unfortunately, it shows that baseball was missing so many things for so many years. But the implication of it's a new game and people want to see emotion. People, if you're asking me, I always wanted to see emotion. It's why John McEnroe was such a lightning rod. It's why Dennis Rodman was so good. It's why Jordan pumping his fists or Brett Favre running up and down a field after a long touchdown pass. People relate to emotion. They want to know that the guys that are playing the sport are not robots. They're not machines. They get fired up. They get pissed off. All of those things. So I'm glad that if this is, quote unquote, the new way and what people want, I would just argue that people have always wanted it. And I'm delighted in the fact that it's back. And Hosmer's reaction is spot on. 100% appreciate what he said. I do think there's a line where you are offensive to the other team. But my gosh, celebrating a play that you made, celebrating your home run, as our great ambassador of behavior within the lines of baseball, Trevor Bauer, said, if you're going to be pissed off that a guy flipped his bat, well, then get him out next time.
Yep, exactly. After the game, the Dodgers hanging on with Joe Kelly on the mound. Dave Roberts, the Dodger manager, was answering questions about what he's going to do with Kenley Jansen, his closer, moving forward. I think he already answered that question with his actions last night, Carl. When he gave Kenley a chance to finish that game last night, and when he didn't feel good about it, he went to Joe Kelly.
Right. So we did the Dodgers first round series, and the Kenley Jansen conversation came up. And what Dave said then, which is exactly what he proved last night, was and no longer, and if this was ever the case, I'm sure he looks back on it and thinks, I probably shouldn't have done it this way. But no longer can you be blindly loyal to a particular player and a particular role. He said, I have an obligation to the other players on the team, to the organization, not to just fall back on, well, Kenley's my closer. You can't do that. And other teams now, when they bring their closer in, will begin to warm other pitchers up at the same time, because you can't afford to fall back on, well, Kenley's done it for years and he didn't seem to have the pop on the fastball, wasn't moving as much as it has, but we're going to stick with him. Yeah. You know, Joe Kelly was the answer last night, but Dave told us in round one, I have an obligation, which is an enlightening way of saying, I can't do what I've always done or traditional norms. We have to go in another direction. And if it means Kenley Jansen will now pitch in the seventh inning to kind of get his footing back, we'll do that. But it's an instant reaction to the moment that has to be there, given, you know, where we are with a best 2 out of 3 or a best 3 out of 5 and moving forward. So yeah, I think every closer is in a sense on the clock, because there is no margin for error. And that's something that's changed, which is great.
We had a late season Dodger game. Dave said the same thing to us. And I said, kind of like putting Cody Bellinger in the six hole, National League MVP, and he's hitting six. He goes, exactly. That's exactly right. You're doing what you can to win. I thought Oakland was dead. Ramon Laureano got the team fired up. Chad Pinder hit the big 3-run homer. That was a cool game yesterday.
It was back and forth. I did. At 7-4, I said, well, our 2 o'clock game today is moving to 4 because that series is over, and it's great to show some fight like that to respond to. And again, the seminal moments that sports present, you know, whether it's Jason Hayward and the Cubs inside that mini clubhouse during a rain delay and a speech, it's glorified in movies like Hoosiers. It's seen in Ramon Laureano yesterday. Hey, whatever you need to believe is going to help you, that's on you, and it's a collective thinking, and it's wonderful. So I don't know that Laureano's, imploring his team to, let's wake the hell up here is what caused that, but it's great to see a team fight like that, and why wouldn't you after the season you had and the fact that you're about to dive back into an off season in which life has not returned to any sense of normalcy. You want to keep this thing going as long as you can. And that's the beauty of sports. It's the beauty of this game. It's the beauty of unpredictability and uncertainty and final outs. That's the only time the game ends was absolutely great. Love the game. And that, look, that's a high scoring game. We saw a 2-0 game in our series. That was a great game. You can have excitement and all that in every type of baseball game.
Yesterday, the Rays take a 2-1 lead. And again, Randy Arozarena has another great game. He's hitting 600 in the postseason. He's got a 636 on base percentage. I got to say, Carl, when I watch him swing the bat, he doesn't waggle the bat like Gary Sheffield, but there are not many hitters when they are standing at the plate where you're sitting there going, oh, my God, I don't know how the pitcher's going to get the ball by this guy. That's the way he looks like right now.
Yeah. There's no doubt. I mean, he's become David Ortiz from a few years ago. I think it was Kevin Cash called him Mookie Betts in a sense from his own country. He's become bigger than life in the sense that he's clearly in the heads now of Yankee pitchers just because of his success. And these are so hard to explain. And I think it was Verducci last night, and I apologize if I'm wrong, but he talked about when he was, in quarantine, he would do 300 push-ups a day, and he came out of his room looking like a different guy. He's much stronger than he was. And look, again, the change in who he is, what he means to a team, it's the Chad Pinder, but it's Chad Pinder like all the time in this series. The beauty of the postseason, Buster, is while you expect Betts and Bellinger on the Dodgers to do things and Judge and Stanton on the Yankees to do things, sometimes it's a Brett Gardner slap single in the left. Sometimes it's a Rezarena for the Rays. Sometimes it's Chad Pinder hitting a big shot. Jake Lamb shows up. This is not the NBA where it's always LeBron James or Anthony Davis or Jimmy Butler on the Heat. This is the beauty of the nine guys. Freddie Freeman doesn't have a hit in our series, and the Braves have a 2-0 lead. It's the beauty of baseball. Everybody has to contribute if you're going to win.
I had forgotten that he was the guy who posted the video on social media of Mike Schilt's profane clubhouse eruption in the cart for the Cardinals last year when they made the playoffs. And that he was included in that trade. If you remember, he was traded last January by the Cardinals with Jose Martinez in a 2020 supplemental first round pick for Matthew Liberatore, who's a first round pick from 2018. Boy, that trade is looking really smart. On the other hand, I think, given what happened with the Yankees last night, Tanaka gets hit around. Let's face it, his stuff is not what it's been in the past. Given what happened in Game 2, there's no doubt if the Yankees are knocked out, that decision in Game 2 is going to hang over this franchise, really going into spring training until the next time they're in the postseason again. You know, I live here in New York. I listen to talk radio. The reaction to what happened and the absolute the frustration and anger over that decision is going to last a long time if they get knocked out.
No question. I mean, the magnifying glass is much larger in the postseason, and you could argue three times as large because it's the Yankees in the city of New York. And look, to his credit, Aaron Boone said, "I was the one that ultimately made the decision. You know, we all discussed as an organization a short leash for Garcia, but he's the one who dictated how long or short the leash was going to be. I don't believe he's told us before. It's not like there's a telephone or somebody in the hallway saying, go get him now. That's a decision made on the bench. And there's no doubt that if it worked and Jay Happ was better, we could, the conversation, the narrative would be very different. But these are the types of decisions that you find yourself making and then dealing with the consequences of them. The challenge, and I had heard from certain folks that had heard from people within the Yankee organization that they knew Tanaka wasn't 100%. So I guess if I knew that, I would at least be inclined to maybe save Happ for the Tanaka start in a piggyback role. But again, that may also be not the case and not true. And they believe Tanaka and his stuff were going to be what they have been in the postseason. Look, in hindsight is always, unfortunately 2020, especially for a fan, sometimes it's 2040. Like, are you kidding? Like, didn't you see that? Like, why? What did you see in Garcia that I didn't? I always hate to, regardless of the relationship you have with the manager, question the manager's decision, question the lineup, because they tend to know things that we don't know. But sure, from 30,000 feet above in the post game, it did look like, well, I don't know why we have to do that quickly.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. And Aaron Boone will be answering questions about that in spring training. He'll be answering questions about it during the regular season and going into next year's postseason. And your game yesterday, boy, what fun. Ian Anderson, 5 2/3 innings, no earned runs, 8 strikeouts. I watched his postgame interview, Carl, and he reminded me, speaking of Williamsport, of one of those little leaguers. Like, he's just got the biggest grin on his face, and you'd think that he was 10 years old, except for the fact when he stands on the mound, his composure is ridiculous. We had a, you know, we did one of our broadcasts last week. We had his first start, and he just looked so unflappable with so much confidence in that changeup.
Well, I think the important, and you just touched on it, confidence. I think you can smile like that after a game like that. I think you can basically smile every time you go onto the mound because innately, you know that if your stuff is right or close to right, you're going to win the battle. You know, you're going to be better than the guy at the plate if your changeup is working. And it was interesting too, his post-game comments about how he thought the first inning in which he had a couple of guys on and he was not sharp, but he got out of it, was the most important inning that he pitched because it settled him down a little bit. He acknowledged he was a little more nervous in this start than even the start in the first round. So again, I think it's a combination of my stuff's going to get you out when I'm on. And after the first inning, my little changeup at 88, you guys all hung over. I clearly can throw a fastball where I want, when I want. When you have that supreme level of confidence, you're going to take the ball. And this is a game changer for the Braves moving forward this postseason and even into next season when you think about having Freed and Anderson and Soroka and the young talent that they have on this team. This is Alex Anthopoulos's, you know, dream come true here. Unfortunately, Soroka's hurt, but my gosh, you do have a guy who completely now believes he's going to win the battle when it becomes he versus the batter. And that's why I think you had that look on the guy's face yesterday.
And I'm really curious to see what Kyle Wright does today. You know, I'm tuned to him because he's a Vanderbilt guy. But, you know, after working with that performance coach, you know, earlier this season, I think it started in August, and to see how he finished down the stretch, you know, just we've heard those stories of guys like John Smoltz who worked with a performance coach, you know, sports psychiatrist, and they turn a corner.
By the way, Tyler Matzik, the same thing, Buster. How about that story? I mean, Tyler Matzik had the yips. He had anxiety. He goes with the performance coach to deal with all that. And I mean, that's the one thing that I've certainly been slapped in the face with during this series, how great this Brave bullpen is. I mean, and they come at you from every angle, from both sides. That's a weapon, you know, and they've used the same guys with the exception of Smith yesterday, Martin, I should say, with the exception of Martin, 2 straight days. Now, this is a great question for anybody that's in a clinch situation, especially if you use guys for 1 or 2 days. Do you bring them back now to win this game, end it, get a couple of days off to reset, or you're reluctant to go back to those guys again, the Matziks and the O'Days of the world, because you want to give them a blow for a day? We're up 2-0. We have to win 1 of the next 3. That's sort of an interesting sideline to how this game plays out, assuming Kyle Wright pitches well and they have a lead. If not, you understand the direction that Snicker will go. But yeah, the mental side of this stuff and these decisions, just like Boone was under a microscope, all these things, like every year, will be looked at and second guessed and third guessed. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, you know, I covered Joe Torre for 4 years, and every year he managed the World Series in those 4 years, and his absolute philosophy was you win today. You do. If you can win today, you do it. And I covered the Indians in 2016 when they basically made it to Game 7 of the World Series with Corey Kluber and 3 great relievers. Terry Francona managed the exact same way. Look, I'll worry about tomorrow. If I can win today and I have a guy who can help me today, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, 2 managers with a lot of success. All right, Ravi, thanks for doing this.
All right, Buster. By the way, one other aside. You know, you do know, of course, where Ian Anderson is committed to go pitch.
Of course I do. And I don't know how
another
I feel
Vanderbilt
about that.
Commit. It's another Vanderbilt commit. Is every great pitcher from Vanderbilt crying out loud?
Pretty much every great. And that's going to continue through next year's draft. You know, I view Mookie Betts with bitterness because the first time I met him, I said, hey, you know, you grew up just outside of Nashville. What happened with you and Vanderbilt? He goes, no, I wasn't going to go there. I was going to go to the University of Tennessee. You know, I don't know how I feel about that.
All right, bud. See you later.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
I mentioned to Carl, boy, here in New York, Aaron Boone, the Yankees, getting absolutely blasted for that decision in game two with starting Davey Garcia and bringing J-Hap out of the bullpen quickly. Here's a taste of that. Michael Kay, who works on the Yankees Yes Network, and that's the forum that he was speaking in this clip, and also someone who's on ESPN Radio New York, talking about that decision. Give a listen.
I will tell you this. Every time, the team that invented the opener is the Tampa Bay Rays. And the reason they invented the opener is because they didn't have enough starters. So they were just trying to piece it together. So you took a guy who the other 29 teams in baseball would trade the Yankees one of their top prospects to get, Davey Garcia, and you wasted him in one inning. And now you put yourself in a situation that if there is a game four, and there will be a game four, obviously, it's going to be Jordan Montgomery who starts. That's the guy you want starting a game where you could go home. That's not a knock on Jordan Montgomery. The Yankees had several options for today, and they choose to go with an opener so that the other manager could flip his lineup, which he didn't even blink. Because why didn't he blink? Because J-Hap is not a guy who's devastating against left-handers. And you can see what the lefties did today. They were 2-for-7 against him. That didn't scare him into doing that. They weren't bringing in Sandy Koufax. It doesn't make sense what they did. This was a move that would be looked at as a panic move. There's no need to panic. You won yesterday. You have Tanaka tomorrow. Why are you trying to reinvent the wheel? If the Yankees end up losing this series, they will look at this gamble and say, that's the reason why we lost. You let the Tampa Bay Rays back into the series. And it's inexcusable what happened today. It didn't make sense. And as I said earlier, it's the New York Yankees trying to show everybody we're smarter than you. And the Tampa Bay Rays, by the way, they're pretty smart too. So you're going to try to outsmart a team that's pretty smart in its own right. It was a huge gamble, and it exploded today.
Bill Chaiken covers baseball for the LA Times, and he is getting up early for us on this Friday. We're taping at about 9:50 East Coast time. Bill is about 6:50 West Coast time. Thanks for doing that for us.
Anytime. Good morning.
So I've got a number of issues I want to ask you about, and you're so good at writing about the business of baseball. But first off, the Dodgers, you know, they are in a position now where they could close out their series against the Padres. I think for a lot of the teams, I know from talking with players and staffers on background, they kind of look at the championship as being not necessarily that big of a deal because it's such a weird season. But my feel from afar is that it would mean a lot to the Dodgers. What's your sense?
Yes, it absolutely would. The Dodgers have done a tremendous job at building what most general managers say they want, a sustainably successful team. They don't want the dips. They don't want the highs. They want to be a contender every year. And the Dodgers now have won the National League West for 8 consecutive years. Tremendous accomplishment in this era of parity. But people in Los Angeles have seen this act before, and they're hungering for a championship. The Dodgers have not been a World Series champion since 1988. We all love Kirk Gibson, but everybody's a little tired of watching the videos. People here would like something new. And it's really going to be interesting, given the timing of this season, because the two dominant teams in Los Angeles are the Lakers and the Dodgers. And while the Dodgers have been on this run of winning the division for 8 years in a row, the Lakers have been terrible the past few years. This is the first year they've been in the playoffs in about a decade. I'm not exactly sure, but their one went away from the NBA championship. And the last thing the Dodgers need to see and their fans need to see is a parade for the Lakers, even if it turns out to only be a virtual parade, and the Dodgers losing out one more time.
Speaking of fans, you sent out a tweet the other day that absolutely caught my attention about this plan to have fans in the stands for the World Series in Texas, that that the health and safety protocol for the fans is going to be different than the players and the staffers. That was a surprise to me. I thought for sure that if they let fans in the stands, that it would be a very aggressive monitoring. What you got on that?
Yeah, I was surprised by that too. Basically, as you know, Buster, if you go to a ballpark during the regular season when fans are not allowed, and even now into the playoffs, there's a very strict protocol, as you mentioned. And one of the pillars of that protocol is taking your temperature, screening you for a fever, because a fever is a symptom, not the only symptom, but one of somebody who might have the coronavirus. And the players have to get their temperature taken when they get to the ballpark. The reporters do, and we don't even go anywhere near the players, the cleaning staff, the coaches, the team staff. So it was a little bit fascinating to me to read that baseball is going to sell 11,500 tickets for the World Series games and for the NLCS. World Series already sold out. And yet the fans will not be screened for temperature. And it may be part of an evolving theory in the infectious disease community, because now we have some studies. And the trick is, sure, it might not be a bad idea, because if you even catch one person, that's one less person who might spread the disease. But if you have a fever, it doesn't mean that you have the coronavirus. And more importantly, if you have the coronavirus, it doesn't mean that you're going to have a fever. And maybe this is evolving into a situation of, is this all that necessary and helpful, or does it just make people feel more comfortable? And there are some studies I found out about the other day when I wrote about this that said, you know, if you want to give fans a test, here's what you should do. Test them for sense of smell. Give them like a scratch and sniff card, or open up some scents of various kinds, because that's a more relevant symptom. So it's all evolving as the science develops, but I thought the atmosphere this year was pretty interesting, and the optics are concerning, given that if you're trying to keep the players safe, which is the whole purpose of trying to get through this season, why you would let 11,500 fans in the ballpark and not subject them to the tests that players have to take, just the temperature checks. I don't mean that they should all be screened at the door with sticks up their nose. That was weird.
So while this season is being played, while the postseason is being played under the radar, Major League Baseball's going about the business now, completely restructuring its minor leagues and the way they're done. And it's essentially they're bringing in this mass amount of teams and they're going to be under the control of Major League Baseball. I'm skeptical, generally speaking, that this is going to be an effective way. And I understand that the team level, there was a lot of concern about the efficiency, about using resources. Where does this stand now, Bill?
Yeah, this started last winter, and it's sort of a reflection of the analytics that go on in the front office. And when we talk about analytics, of course, it's mostly about how do we determine the effectiveness of players on the major league level. But there are all sorts of business analytics used in baseball now, as teams trying to figure out how to make their ticket prices more efficient or how to get you to buy more concessions. And the business analytics have extended to baseball operations. So what owners have found out is, why are we drafting 40 players every year when we know that once you get past the first five rounds, there's very little chance of anybody getting to the major league? Some, but not a great chance. And then to do that, we need to set up all these minor league teams that we have to subsidize in faraway places and facilities that are not the best, and subject our very best prospects who have to go play on those teams to 10 or 12 or 14-hour bus rides. That doesn't seem very efficient when we could draft only the very best players, send them to training complexes in Arizona and Florida that are lovely, have our best instructors there, and focus player development on the very best players. Okay, well, that's great. But in order to do this, you're getting rid of 40 minor league teams. And the communities in which those teams are based clearly are not real happy about this. It became a huge political issue last winter. Bernie Sanders spoke out very strongly on behalf of the minor league owners and the minor league teams, because he helped bring a minor league team, as you well know, Buster, to Vermont, his home state. And then the pandemic hit. Suddenly, we all had greater concerns than what was going to happen in the minor leagues. But in the meantime, the agreement that governs the relationship between the major leagues and the minor leagues was expiring at the end of September. So Major League Baseball sat quietly and sat within their rights and said, well, you know, we're not going to roll that over just because of the pandemic. So either we reach a new agreement by the end of September, or there is no agreement and we can do what we want. Well, we got to the end of September. There's no agreement. What's happened so far is that the president of the minor leagues has resigned. Major League Baseball announced yesterday it's moving the minor league headquarters into its New York offices. They've appointed somebody to lead that transition. The Appalachian League, what was a short season or a rookie league, has already been converted to a college summer league. And the plan for most of the 40 teams, although they have not all been identified that are targeted for elimination, is to be able to offer some sort of baseball in those communities, sometimes a college summer league, sometimes an independent league. Minor league operators say this isn't going to go as well, because people like to see affiliated baseball. Hey, in my town, I could see the first round pick from the Giants or the Red Sox or the Dodgers. But this will save the major league owners some money. And as we know, there's been nothing that's driven their decisions more over the past few years, and probably more urgently now because of the pandemic, than saving some money.
Boy, and there are going to be a lot more decisions like that to come, as you well know. Especially as we get into free agency. All right, Bill, thanks for doing this. And again, thanks for getting up early.
Anytime, Buster. Take care.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. Stephen Otley is first up. At Stephen Otley writes in, given the success of Rosarena, Luke Voigt's good form, and Tommy Pham playing well, do you think the Cardinals have a problem developing talent because they seem to spot it okay, but then trade it away?
You know, Stephen, that is a great question. And I suspect that they'll be asking that question within the Cardinals organization as they do the self-evaluation. Because, you know, you look at what's come through the farm system, you know, certainly you see a guy like Paul DeJong. He's been good. Colton Wong has been a good player for them as well. But they have seemingly on the position player side haven't been as good at developing young players. Another thing we haven't really seen with the Cardinals is we've seen with teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees. They don't really acquire undervalued guys and then see them explode in their organization. You know, I think about a Luke Voigt going to the Yankees. I think about a Chris Taylor going to the Dodgers. That's something the Cardinals, is a team with some resources, probably would want more of.
Next up, we got Jamie Dawson at JM Dawson 90 writes in, Buster, with Dick Williams resigning from his position with the Reds, does he emerge as a favorite for one of the GM Prez vacancies, such as the Angels or Phillies?
I don't think so. You know, what I read yesterday about that was that Dick Williams has other things in mind as he moves forward outside of baseball.
Last one for today. Nick Murray at Nick Murray 91 writes in the expansion teams talk, I was waiting to hear Montreal. When it didn't come, I realized all we ever hear in Canada is good news about the return of the Expos. So assuming the ballpark is figured out, what's the realistic appetite in Major League Baseball to go back to Montreal?
I haven't spent a lot of time talking to people in baseball in the last few months about sort of the hot cities in their minds. I mean, Nashville is clearly on a front burner for the sport. But I got to say, I've never gotten the feeling of absolutely Montreal. Yeah, Montreal's a slam dunk because, you know, baseball's been burned in that market. where they saw the attendance drop after the 94-95 strike. You know, they saw the concerns there. I hope it gets back there. It'd be fun to have a second team in Canada, but I don't feel at this moment like there's a lot of momentum for that.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Please subscribe to, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And for those playing along at home, that is 2 Vanderbilt references and 1 Nashville reference in today's podcast. So there you go, Buster.
Well, we're just going to keep picking them up as long as these Vanderbilt guys continue to dominate in the postseason. Thank you, Dansby, for doing that. That's all for today. My thanks to Ravi, to Bill, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.